General Seti also said Tel Aviv will remain a primary target for the Yemeni armed forces. He added Yemen will continue to strike positions in Israel, including sensitive military and intelligence targets, and as long as the Gaza genocide continues and the regime's siege on the Palestinian territory abates. At least one person was killed and seven injured in this drone attack in Tel Aviv. Drone hit an area near the U.S. consulate office, causing damage to it as well. Tel Aviv's mayor says the city is now moving to a higher state of alert. Israeli media, meanwhile, said regime's air defenses failed to detect the drone as no air raid sirens went off before the explosion was heard. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is facing more criticism over a genocidal war in Gaza following the Yemeni drone attack in Tel Aviv. Former Israeli Minister of Military Affairs Avigdor Lieberman said, "It's no surprise the person unable to stop attacks in the north and south can't stop them in Tel Aviv either." That was in reference to attacks by resistance groups from Gaza and Lebanon. Opposition leader Yair Lapid also reacted to this Tel Aviv attack. He said it shows Netanyahu has lost deterrence and has no clear policy or plan. The Israeli premier has already been facing growing criticism over his handling of the Gaza war. Political opponents and the public are particularly furious at him for failing to return captives held in Gaza. They say Netanyahu is seeking his own political goals. Political law commentator Hussein Al-Bukhaiti says drone attack on Tel Aviv sends a clear message that nowhere in occupied Palestine is safe.
Yahya Sari, the spokesperson of Yemeni army, has announced that they have launched an attack using one drone. This drone is actually, as they say, can actually avoid all radar system. And of course, we have seen that Israeli's media had declared that one settler was killed and several others were injured in this drone attack. And this is a clear proof that these drones that come from Yemen has gone through thousands of kilometers till they reach Israel. For this drone to reach, and this is a new drone that has entered the battle, and the name of this drone, as they say, called Yaffa. Of course, Israeli, after the occupation of Palestine, they have changed the name of Yaffa and they have changed it into Tel Aviv. And I believe, as Yahya Sari has warned all Israeli settlers, and he said that Yaffa area is not safe. And I think this is a clear message that now all occupied Palestine is not safe for all the Zionist settlers. We know that in areas around Gaza, they have moved at the beginning after October 7 toward Eilat, and as well from the north by the attack from Hezbollah, they have moved to the center of Israel and to as well, especially areas in Tel Aviv and Yemeni, as they targeted Eilat before and as well now targeting Yaffa, also known as Tel Aviv. I believe that now all occupied Palestine is unsafe for all the Israeli settlers. This is a clear message. I believe that this is the beginning of a major attack against any area. And I can say clearly that Yemenis, I believe that they will conduct attack either against military site or against any other economic infrastructure, because what the Israeli is doing against the Palestinian people, especially in Gaza, is not acceptable. And Yemeni are expanding their attack now to target all areas in occupied Palestine. And I believe they will as well upgrade more weapons, more missiles that could actually make a huge damage when they reach their target in occupied Palestine.
And we also spoke to political commentator Scott Bennett about Yemen's retaliatory operations against Israel, including this drone strike on Tel Aviv. He believes operations are a direct result of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's actions in Gaza.
Well, I think the Yemenis are sending a very clear message. We will no longer stand by idly and watch women and children being blown up and murdered and innocent civilians being slaughtered by the devilish evil of the Israelis. We are standing and we are stepping in. And the Yemenis are sending a very clear message. They didn't strike the U.S. embassy. They struck near the former U.S. embassy, and they were quite mild in this attack. They could have done what the Israelis have done. They could have targeted children and schools, but they chose not to. They're not as barbaric as the Israelis. So I think they're sending a message: for every strike that you furthermore do against Palestine, we will send a drone to strike the Israeli infrastructure and people. What you are inflicting upon the Palestinians, your people in Israel will feel. These are not Yemeni strikes. In fact, and in a figurative sense, these are Netanyahu's missiles being redirected back against Israel. The destruction that they are hurling upon the Palestinians are simply being redirected against Israel, and they are going to be striking the Israeli buildings and population. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Yemenis also send drones with leaflets stating very clearly this attack on this building was because of the Israeli attack in Palestine on this date, it's striking these buildings.
Yemeni protesters have poured onto the streets of the northern city of Sa'ada in yet another rally in support of war-ravaged Gaza. Demonstration was one of the biggest by Yemenis in the past months. They've been holding rallies in Sa'ada and the capital Sana'a every Friday since Gaza war broke out in October. The Yemeni protesters denounced Israel and its main supporter, the U.S., for the Gaza genocide. Demonstrators hailed the Yemeni army also for its military operations targeting Israeli-linked vessels in the high seas. The latest such operation took place just hours ago, according to maritime security firm Ambry. A container ship was hit by projectiles just southeast of the Yemeni port city of Aden. Yemen had previously said that any vessel heading to Israeli ports will be targeted. Lebanese resistance movement has announced a fresh rocket attack on Israeli positions. Hezbollah says it fired rockets at Abirim settlement in northern Israel for a first time. And to get more details, we're going to now swing over to our Beirut correspondent, Mariam Saleh. Hello, Mariam. Hope you're safe and doing well out there in the Lebanese capital. What's the latest you could tell us, Mariam?
Well, we saw yesterday, last night, the Israelis definitely crossing the boundaries when it came to targeting areas where there were civilians. Though there were, perhaps it was one Hezbollah member in one of the shelling instances that was martyred. However, there were several areas which were targeted, like Shaqra, like Majd al-Salam and Jmajmi, which are considered further away from the border. They were also targeted by Israeli shelling, and there was several civilians that were targeted and that were wounded. And so Hezbollah made it clear through Hezbollah Secretary General Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah in his speech on Ashura Day. He told the Israelis very clearly, and usually when he sends such a warning, they do live up to that warning. He said that if you do continue to target civilians as you did in the 2 days before Ashura, then Hezbollah will target settlements that have not been targeted before. And here we're talking about the Israeli colonial settlements, whether in the north or in the Galilee region, perhaps even further off. But this time, Hezbollah targeted the area, as you said, Abirim, and this was through Katyusha rockets. And we notice how Hezbollah uses Katyusha rockets and sometimes Falak rockets to target settlements that are also far away from the Lebanese border, in order to make that equation clear, that if you target civilians that are far away from our border, then also we will target at the same level of distance when it comes to geography, but also to those settlements as well, in addition to targeting military targets as well. So Abirim is one of the settlements, the colonial settlements for the Israelis, that has not been targeted by Hezbollah. Now, there's another development as well, which is also very significant. Hezbollah targeted today the Ruwaisat al-Alam post, and that is a post that is also seen by the people of Shabab, which is not the occupied part. Everyone thought it was a Burkan rocket. However, Hezbollah declared that they have used their rocket, which they have not used before, and that is the rocket Wabin, and it also was produced by Hezbollah's fighters. So this is a homemade, it's a domestic rocket, used by Hezbollah. This is the first time that they use it. They're saying this is a very heavy rocket. We do not have details about the characteristics of that rocket specifically, if it's heavier than Burkan. What is the significance of that rocket specifically is not clear, But this is a new type of rocket that has been put in place within that equation that Hezbollah is uncovering bit by bit, of course, in their capabilities. And so this also is important, although the post has always been targeted before, but now Hezbollah is making sure, perhaps, to make sure that all the posts all along the border, especially in the Lebanese-occupied Shebaa farms, are inoperable and cannot be used by the Israelis, forcing the Israelis to move further away also from the border, perhaps install new posts. Now, the Israeli shelling, of course, has been, of course, presumptuous, as we said. We know that there were two martyrs yesterday and 19 civilian wounded people. There were even children in the area of Majd al-Sinam near Shakra. And so those towns are really heavily inhabited. Many of the people who moved from the border towns, like Farkila and Qiyam, went to live in those towns. And we know also from eyewitnesses and from amateur videos how there were children playing that were right next to the shelling. Fortunately, they were up until now only wounded among the civilians. But of course, if this issue does continue, and we do see a repetition of this, Hezbollah is definitely going to take things further and is going to target settlements that are perhaps even further away and that have not been also evacuated by the Israeli authorities.
Okay, good, and thank you for that update. Miriam, we'll talk to you soon. Maddie, I'm Saleh. They're updating us from Beirut. Meanwhile, Palestinian health officials warned thousands of people in Gaza are at risk of contracting polio. The alarming revelation comes after polio virus was detected in samples of sewage that's starting to take over Gaza amid Israel's ongoing onslaught. The Palestinian Health Ministry said thousands of people in overcrowded tents are now at risk of contracting this highly infectious disease, which causes deformities and paralysis, adding tests carried out in cooperation with the UN Children's Agency show the presence of polio virus existing in Gaza. The ministry says sewage is flowing between tents used by tens of thousands of displaced Gazans. It described presence of polio virus as a new health disaster. Gaza officials said this week that wastewater treatment stations have been turned off due to a lack of fuel. Doctors in Gaza say scabies, chickenpox, skin rashes, and lice are also spreading fast. The UN agencies have frequently warned of a risk of cholera and other more serious diseases becoming epidemics in Gaza. Joining us for more now out of occupied Ramallah is Saad Nimr, professor of political science from Birzeit Universities. Now, professor, hope you're safe and doing well out there in Ramallah. If it's not the food professor, it's the medicine. If it's not doctors and medical staff getting targeted, it's hospitals. If it's not mass graves, it's sanitation processing plants being targeted. The list goes on, and now, if it's not water or food being used as a weapon of war, we got this. Is this really deliberate, knowing that this is going to result in a number of diseases being formed, airborne and waterborne diseases the Israelis target these sewage plants?
Well, that's why we call it genocide. It's genocide literally, because they are targeting everything. As you mentioned, even now it's the war of water. They are fighting the people with water. People can't get water, clean water at all, as well as, you know, medicine, food, and everything. And now, to top it all, we have this report coming out about the polio, because for the last 10 months, there was no immune system for the Palestinians, and there is no shots in the hospitals to give to the children. And the children now, we are afraid that this generation, 10 months of all those who were born during this period, are going to get many of those diseases, which we already became behind us because of the immune system. But now it became really worse. And I think that it is deliberate, and the Israelis do mean it. And nowadays, especially with all these massacres going on every day, they are trying to pressurize the Palestinian resistance in order to give up more of the what the Israeli wanted in the negotiations that is taking place now between Doha and Cairo. So apparently that the Israeli, they don't care about the international law, about the international voices, international organizations who are now warning that things are going to deteriorate in all levels, because everything is going together. So now once there is a crash, it will be a total crash in everything totally, not only medical, food, hunger, thirst, and lots of other things, in addition to the illnesses that also we saw that the sewage system is on the streets because there is no pumps, because there is no electricity, no fuel for the electricity, and so on. So everything is deteriorating. And really, we could reach a moment that everything will crash in one day. And if that happened, we are talking about really not only a genocide, we are talking about, you know, thousands who might die every day.
Thank you for joining us. Stay safe. Professor Saad Nimr joining us from Ramallah. Meanwhile, Israel's indiscriminate strikes continue to pound Gaza, taking the lives of more women and children. In central Gaza, five members of a single family and two other civilians were killed in airstrikes on Al Buraj refugee camp, and four children have gone missing in that attack. Israeli forces also targeted a civilian vehicle in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza, killing three people. Meanwhile, an attack on a home in the Nusayr refugee camp has left one civilian dead and eight injured. And in Gaza City, an Israeli airstrike killed at least five civilians. And an earlier attack in Gaza City's Al-Falah school killed two people and left five injured. To the south, 12 bodies were recovered from a mass grave under Al-Amal Hospital in Khan Yunis. Israeli strikes killed 54 Palestinians and injured 95 in a single day, increasing the overall death toll from the regime's campaign of genocide to 38,850. Thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
The lugubrious ambience of Muharram has already descended upon the streets of Iran, where the soulful beats of drums intertwine with mournful chants, casting a somber spell of contemplation over the nation. Citizens adorned in black attire gather in processions, their faces etched with expressions of deep sorrow, paying homage to the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his companions. With the arrival of Muharram, the entire country has transformed into a canvas of grief, where the echoes of lamentations and the sight of self-flagellation seeks to keep alive the sacrifices made for the sake of truth and justice more than 13 centuries ago. Muharram. Muharram is the first month of the Islamic calendar, a time of profound significance for Muslims worldwide. It is the beginning of a new year, a time of introspection and commemoration of pivotal events in Islamic history. This sacred month serves as a reminder of the sacrifices made by those who upheld the values of justice, faith, and unwavering devotion. In the early days of Muharram in the year 680 AD, Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, alongside his loyal followers, faced the overwhelming forces of the Umayyad Caliph Yazid in the desert of Karbala. Despite their numerical inferiority, Imam Hussein and his companions stood firm in their principles, refusing to compromise their beliefs and choosing to sacrifice their lives for the preservation of justice, truth, and the legacy of the Prophet. Hujjat al-Islam Muhammad Taj Abadi, a religion researcher for over 20 years.
Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam.
History teaches us that Imam Hussein refused to submit to tyranny, to demonstrate that we have the ability to resist tyranny and oppression with courage and dignity. He illustrated that we can oppose oppressive authority regardless of the size of our or their forces. The crucial message is to not stay silent in the face of injustice and oppression. This is a significant lesson that can be learned from the events of Karbala.
This event, marked by immense courage, unwavering faith, and unparalleled sacrifice, has become a testament to the enduring spirit of resistance against oppression and a source of inspiration for Muslims worldwide. In the words of the English novelist Charles Dickens, "If Hussein had fought to quench his worldly desires, then I do not understand why his sister, wife, and children accompanied him. It stands to reason, therefore, that he sacrificed purely for Islam." Centuries have passed, yet Imam Hussein's name continues to resonate with Shia, non-Shia Muslims, and even those beyond the confines of the Islamic faith. His martyrdom has ignited numerous uprisings against unjust rulers throughout the Islamic world, with the most recent being the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran that toppled the oppressive regime of Mohammad Reza Shah. Hujjat al-Islam Ali Akbar Shahrami, a religion expert based in Tehran.
In what ways does Imam Hussein's teaching and legacy resonate from individuals from diverse backgrounds other than the Islamic faith?
ببینید حرکت امام حسین علیه السلام یک حرکت آزادی خواهانه است.
Look, Imam Hussein's movement was a freedom-seeking movement by nature. True, it dates back over 13 centuries, yet his movement sparked an extraordinary discourse of resistance. Even esteemed leaders like Mahatma Gandhi, who himself inspired movements for civil rights and freedom worldwide following his successful anti-colonial struggle in India, regard Imam Hussein as their spiritual leader. Imam Hussein's movement was truly a revolution and a wellspring of inspiration for generations of revolutionary figures across the world.
In Iran, the observance of Muharram holds a particularly meaningful and profound place. The country's deep-rooted connection to the Shia tradition is evident in the extensive commemoration of this month. Mourning rituals, processions, and spiritual gatherings are prevalent throughout Iran as the nation reflects on Imam Hussein's legacy and his struggles against oppression. Hujjat al-Islam Dr. Sayyid Jalal Razavi Mir, who teaches both at university and seminary, has more to say about the story of Karbala.
قیام امام حسین علیه السلام یک قیامی است که باید سه رکن برای او متصور بشه.
Imam Hussein's uprising rests on three pillars. The first pillar involves intellect, making a rational decision to resist oppression and challenge the pressure from the wealthy, powerful, and armed. The second pillar is bravery displayed in the deserts of Karbala, a true epic tale of having the courage to confront overwhelming power without fear. The third pillar is love and compassion associated with the story of Karbala. In our religious literature, there is a well-known saying, "Verily, in the hearts of the believers lie a love for Imam Hussein that will endure forever." This saying has stood the test of time. Even after more than 13 centuries, people still commemorate the martyrdom of Imam Hussein with love and unwavering enthusiasm, regardless of the circumstances.
The mourning rituals, celebrated with remarkable grandeur, hold a revered position in the collective consciousness of the nation. Each distinct ritual conveys messages of self-sacrifice, relentless pursuit of justice, and steadfast devotion to God. Throughout the country, Iranians gather in mosques, Husseinias, and public spaces to participate in these religious and cultural practices. In Iran, passion plays known as taziyeh are performed during Muharram to reenact the events of Karbala, while processions and mourning rituals are observed with deep reverence. These rituals and traditions have become integral parts of Iranian culture, passed down through generations. They contribute to a sense of national identity and heritage, connecting Iranians to their religious and historical roots. The symbolism of Imam Hussein's sacrifice is often invoked in political discourse to inspire resistance and mobilize support for causes deemed just and righteous. Through this commemoration, the Iranian people reaffirm their commitment to these core values, which continue to inspire and guide their collective struggle for freedom and self-determination.
Imam Hussein is indeed a school of life. His noble life should not be limited to a specific reading. The lesson he imparts is relevant throughout life. His love and care for his family, relatives, followers, and society is unparalleled. It could serve as a model for all of us. Imam Hussein had a black servant. In Karbala, when the enemy army surrounded Imam Hussein and his companions, he said to his black servant, "You are free to leave. You should have been with us in times of joy, not at times of war. Go and save yourself. It is time to fight. I do not want you to sacrifice your life for my beliefs."
Meanwhile, the practice of providing free meals known as Nazri has become a commendable tradition amongst various communities during Muharram. These meals are primarily distributed amongst the underprivileged members of society, exemplifying the spirit of compassion and charitable giving. While some benevolent individuals prefer to outsource the preparation of these meals to restaurants or catering services, the act of coming together with relatives and neighbors to cook and distribute the nazri is considered a laudable gesture, fostering a sense of community and strengthening social bonds. Moreover, Muharram is not merely a time for individual mourning, but rather a period that encourages the unity and cohesion of the entire society. It serves as an opportunity for people from diverse backgrounds to come together and reinforce the significance of social unity. This collective observance of Muharram transcends sectarian divides, underscoring the importance of harmony and mutual understanding within the community. We have a lot more to cover today, but let's just take a moment to catch up on the latest headlines.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the news section of this program here. We'll go over some important news headlines. Tehran Times, Rudaki Open Air Theater hosting taziyeh performances in Muharram. The Rudaki Open Air Theater in Tehran is hosting performances of taziyeh, a traditional Iranian passion play, starting from Sunday and continuing throughout the first 10 days of the lunar month of Muharram. This significant event marks the commemoration of the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, who is mourned by millions of Muslims during the Muharram rituals. The Sayyid al-Shuhada Taziyeh group, directed by Ahmad Azizi, will perform every night at 8 p.m. for 10 consecutive nights. The Iranian passion play Taziyeh was registered on the UNESCO list of the Intangible Cultural Heritage of Humanity in November 2010. Taziyeh represents religious events, historical and mythical stories, and folktales. Each performance has the four components of poetry, music, song, and motion. However, stories about the uprising of Imam Hussein and his companions against the oppressive Umayyad dynasty in 680 CE are more highly regarded by taziyeh troops and audiences. Performers are always male, and female roles are played by men, most of whom are amateurs who gain their living through other means but perform for spiritual rewards. It is a kind of drama that depicts the event of Ashura and is performed in Mahu, Chargah, and Shur Baghdad reliefs of Iranian music. Ikna, Imam Ali shrine covered with red carpets ahead of Ashura. As the day of Ashura approaches, the courtyards of the Holy Shrine of Imam Ali in Najaf, Iraq, were covered with red carpets. Ashura marks the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, and the color red symbolizes martyrdom. Haydar al-Isavi, an official with the Astan custodianship of the Holy Shrine in Najaf, said over 25,000 square meters of the courtyards have been covered with red carpets. He said an integrated plan has been implemented at the mausoleum of Imam Ali to host mourners in the first 10 days of the lunar Hijri month of Muharram. He added that more than 100 mukibs, booths providing foods and drinks to pilgrims, have been set up to serve the pilgrims. The Astan has equipped the mukibs with air conditioning and provided drinking water, detergents, and etc., he stated. According to Ali Savi, the Astan seeks to provide the pilgrims and mourners with the best services. Iran front page. Najafis in Iran's Qom mourn Imam Hussein's martyrdom by torch-carrying rituals. Every year on the 8th, 9th, and 10th of the month of Muharram, on the Islamic calendar, Najafi residents of the Iranian shrine city of Qom carry torches as a symbol of mourning for Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam and the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad, who was martyred along with 72 of his companions on the plains of Karbala. The black-clad mourners who hail from the Iraqi city of Najaf gather at Imam Reza Mosque, and the mourning procession moves towards the shrine of Hazrat Masumeh, the sister of Imam Reza, the eighth Shia Imam, to offer their condolences. They carry the traditional torches that symbolize the fire that burned the tents of Imam Hussein's loved ones and companions on Ashura, the 10th day of Muharram in Karbala, Iraq. Shia waits. Imam Hussein Holy Shrine launches free internet access during Muharram and Safar. The communications department affiliated to Imam Hussein Holy Shrine has announced it is providing free internet service for visitors in the area between the two holy shrines and the surrounding areas of the Holy Shrine of Imam Hussein around the clock during the months of Muharram and Safar. It is worth mentioning that the Holy Shrine of Imam Hussein has mobilized all efforts to receive millions of mourners, in addition to intensifying its technical and technological efforts through the communications department, which is working diligently to secure various services for the departments of the Holy Shrine of Imam Hussein and the visitors. ABNO, 100 Quran exhibitions to be held across Iran during Muharram. A total of 100 Quran exhibitions will be organized in leading gatherings of mourners during the lunar months of Muharram this year, an official said. Quranic exhibitions will be held over 100 leading gatherings of mourners during the months of Muharram and Safar. Hojat al-Islam Majid Babakhani, head of the organization that oversees the mourning gatherings, told a press conference on Sunday. These exhibitions, titled Quran and Resistance, present Quranic concepts through art, pictures, and posters, he added. We cannot mention the Ahlul Bayt without also referring to the Quran, nor we can discuss the Quran and ignore the Ahlul Bayt, he said. Programs have been organized for Muharram morning processions to be immersed in a more Quranic atmosphere, noted the official. This includes both the aesthetic use of Quranic themes and art and engaging with Quranic verses and concepts to help mourners become more familiar with selected verses, he added. And thank you for joining us in this section. Please stay tuned for the main narrative.
The 10th of Muharram, known as Ashura, is a day of profound significance in the Islamic calendar. It marks the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, and his companions at the Battle of Karbala. This event is a poignant reminder of the importance of standing up for justice, even in the face of overwhelming adversity.
On Ashura of 680 AD, Imam Hussein and his 72 companions were slain by order of Yazid, the despotic Umayyad ruler of the time, as they refused to swear allegiance to him, whom they considered corrupt to the bones. The family of Imam Hussein was taken captive and brought on a tour around Kufa and Damascus. Hujjat al-Islam Dr. Mehdi Montazer Qaim, a religion expert who also teaches at the University of Judicial Sciences and Administrative Services, put the story of Karbala in context. He said Imam Hussein was on the way to Kufa when he was barred from moving on by the army of Yazid. The people of Kufa had written Imam Hussein a letter explaining their plight to him. In the letter, two crucial points had been made.
One issue related to the widespread financial corruption among the authorities of that era. Another concern was the oppressive style of governance. Regarding the financial corruption, the officials were misappropriating public funds for personal gain. This resulted in a widening wealth gap in society. The affluent were becoming wealthier while the underprivileged were becoming poorer with each passing day. In reference to the second point highlighted in a letter addressed to Imam Hussein, the residents of Kufa lamented that the ruling regime at the time lacked the support of the people. The governing system was in place without obtaining their consent. In essence, the rights of the people had been violated in both financial and political aspects.
The commemoration of Ashura has been a key element in shaping the identity of Shia Muslims, emphasizing principles of sacrifice, resistance, and standing up against oppression. Dr. Montazer Qaim said although there were many reasons for Imam Hussein to rise against Yazid, there was one special issue that had made him so determined to do so, social injustice.
حکومت یزید اشکال‌های متعدد داشت. اصلا یه اشکالش هم این بود که
Yazid's way of ruling was problematic in various aspects. Firstly, it lacked legitimacy. Imam Hussein was the rightful ruler of the Muslim community, not Yazid. Therefore, Yazid was considered a usurper. However, when Imam Hussein chose to oppose Yazid, he did not cite the illegitimacy of Yazid's rule as his reason for uprising. Similarly, he didn't cite Yazid's corruption and immoral conduct as a driving force behind his move. What truly motivated Imam Hussein to confront Yazid was the absence of social justice in society. His action aimed to champion the rights of the people.
To commemorate Ashura is to honor the courage to confront evil in all its manifestations at any cost. As the renowned Scottish historian and essayist Thomas Carlyle aptly observed, the best lesson which we get from the tragedy of Karbala is that Hussein and his companions were rigid believers in God. They illustrated that the numerical superiority does not count when it comes to the truth and the falsehood. The victory of Hussein, despite his minority, marvels me. Meanwhile, the annual commemoration of Imam Hussein's martyrdom in Karbala, Iraq, holds great significance for millions of Muslims worldwide. Despite the sweltering temperatures, many Iranian devotees, along with others from the rest of the world, have been converging upon the sacred site of the Imam Hussein's burial place, which is revered as one of the most hallowed destinations in the Islamic world. Hujjat al-Islam Mehdi Montazer Qaim shared his reading of Enjoying Good and Forbidding Wrong in the context of Karbala.
Imam Hussein,
what did Imam Hussein do when faced with this situation in society? I mean the corruption of the authorities and the systematic injustice in society. He aimed to reform society. He famously said that he had risen up to reform his grandfather's ummah. So in this sense, Imam Hussein was a reformist. How did he want to undertake reforms? Through what has been mentioned in the Holy Quran as enjoining good and forbidding wrong. This is a duty all Muslims are called to perform in the Quran. Imam Hussein sought to enjoin the ruling system to do good deeds and forbid again the ruling system from doing bad deeds. The point is the target of Imam Hussein's reforms was not ordinary people, but the ruling system, because it's the ruling system that has a direct huge impact on society as a whole.
Imam Hussein's sacrifice at Karbala has left an indelible mark on the hearts and minds of Muslims worldwide. His absolute commitment to the principles of Islam, his refusal to submit to tyranny, and his willingness to give his life for the sake of his faith have made him a revered figure in Islamic history. His legacy continues to inspire generations of Muslims to uphold the values of justice, compassion, and resistance against oppression. As we turn the pages of history, resonances of the past reverberate in the present, as seen in the plight of Gaza's oppressed people rising in defiance against injustice, mirroring the valorous stand of Karbala's martyrs. This unyielding quest for liberation symbolizes the timelessness of human aspirations for freedom, echoing across centuries and geographies. The events of Karbala and the ongoing situation in Gaza both involve themes of struggle against oppression, sacrifice, resistance, and the pursuit of justice. The story of Imam Hussein's stand against oppression and injustice in Karbala resonates with the struggles of the Palestinian people against occupation, displacement, and systematic violations of their rights. At the same time, by reflecting on Imam Hussein's sacrifice and commitment to justice, individuals can empathize with the Palestinian experience and stand in solidarity with their quest for freedom and self-determination.
Imam Hussein's movement conveys a clear message: resist oppression and stand up for the oppressed against the oppressor. Despite the enemy wielding enormous power in the deserts of Karbala, Imam Hussein refused to surrender. A well-known saying attributed to Imam Hussein is, "Far from humiliation." This phrase has become a rallying cry for various resistance groups in the region from Yemen to Lebanon. Drawing inspiration from the events of Karbala, this phrase has become ingrained in the Shia culture. They will never beg for mercy from their enemies, even at the cost of their lives. "Far from humiliation" defines the conduct of Shia Muslims towards their adversaries. This resistance narrative, initiated by Imam Hussein, has proven to be triumphant throughout history. Today, Imam Hussein, his family, and his companions are revered by millions of Muslims worldwide.
The teachings and legacy of Imam Hussein hold universal values, attractive to individuals from diverse backgrounds. His willingness to sacrifice everything, including his life, for a noble cause embodies qualities of courage, selflessness, and dedication. Imam Hussein's defiance of a tyrannical ruler and refusal to submit to unjust authority can be seen as a timeless lesson in standing up for one's beliefs and challenging oppressive systems, principles that are relevant to people regardless of their religious affiliation. The narratives surrounding Imam Hussein's companions who stood by him in his struggle highlight the importance of unity, solidarity, and support for one another in times of adversity.
In the story of Karbala, there are characters of various ages and ethnicities, yet they are all united in their support for their leader. From an old woman like Wahab to the black servant of Imam Hussein, there were 17 old men among Imam Hussein's companions, but they all fought bravely to defend their leader against the enemy. This unity and solidarity are crucial when facing oppressive powers in our time.
The story of Karbala is indeed a rich and complex narrative that holds deep significance for many people. It is often interpreted in various ways, with different layers of symbolism and meaning attached to it. It is seen as a struggle for justice, truth, and standing up against tyranny and oppression. Through contemplation and reflection on the events of Karbala, individuals can draw lessons about principles such as courage, loyalty, and resistance against injustice. The story has inspired countless people over the centuries and continues to be a source of spiritual guidance and reflection for many.
Last but not least, Imam Hussein does not solely belong to us. He is a leader for all humanity, a guiding light for all freedom-seeking individuals worldwide. For those who strive for justice for all, we should not claim him exclusively for ourselves. Imam Hussein surpasses all sectarian and ethnic divisions. Let's aspire to be genuine followers of him through our actions.
That's all for today. Thank you. Please do join us again same times next week to see what else is on. Till next time, take care.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible?
Mm-hmm.
راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The holy prophet of Islam is the example
of عمل انسان بعد از ایمان.
Self purification is the most significant fact.
امامت یک اصل زنده است در تاریخ اسلام.
امامت is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of iRab English Radio, Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Ayatollah Javadi Amali. Please stay tuned.
وجود مبارک امام سجاد سلام الله علیه سوال کردن در این جریان و نهضت و قیام و مقاومت کی پیروز شد؟ فرمود ما.
Once Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, our fourth Shia Imam, was asked, who will be victorious in this movement, this uprising which you have undertaken and this resistance that you have been showing? He replied, certainly us. Even though Imam Sajjad alayhi salam was brought to Syria in chains, yet he said, we are the ones who are victorious. We went there and revived the Islamic school of thought and showed the world what humanity is. We showed them the true and original identity of Islam by delving deep into it. Thus, we presented the source of truth to people. Many people were awakened through Imam al-Hussein's movement and the religion was revived. And if you want to see who has won victory, say the adhan and iqama during the prayer and see whose name you will mention.
Imam Sajjad alayhi salam continued, "We went there and revived this name and returned home." The name of the Holy Prophet is mentioned in the Adhan and Iqama. Whenever you say the Adhan and Iqama, you mention the Holy Prophet's name. The Umayyads intended to get rid of this name.
تمام هویت ما به وسیله حسین ابن علی سلام الله علیه بعد از
Therefore, we see that our entire identity has been revealed by Hussein ibn Ali after the departure of the Holy Prophet and the incidents which occurred. If in the world we sell ourselves to the sun, we have sustained a loss. If we sell ourselves to the moon or the Milky Way, we have incurred a loss. There is no one more valuable and precious than us, because eternity is ours and Allah has reserved heaven with all its glory for us. Whatever man desires exists in heaven. That is precisely why Imam al-Hussein gave away whatever he had, his own life and the dear ones, in the way of preserving the religion. In fact, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam rose up in the name of enjoining the good and forbidding evil. There is also a verse in the Quran which is about this issue. In fact, the two weighty things, that is the Holy Quran and the Ahlul Bayt, both invite us to a single cause. The very act of an infallible person, such as the Prophet, his daughter Fatima, and the 12 Imams, serve as an ultimate proof for us. However, in order for us to understand this issue by assessing the ayahs of the Quran and the action of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, we see that whatever that Allah stated in the Holy Quran was carried out by Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, and whatever Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam did, Allah has mentioned it in the Holy Quran. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program, Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Ayatollah Javadi Amali. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi aman.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Yemeni armed forces say they have carried out a drone strike on Tel Aviv in retaliation for Israel's genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. At least 50 Palestinians are killed in latest Israeli airstrikes across Gaza, where the total death toll is approaching 39,000. Palestinian health officials sound the alarm over a polio epidemic in Gaza after wastewater treatment stations had to shut down due to a lack of fuel. The Yemeni armed forces say they have carried out a drone strike on Tel Aviv in retaliation for Israel's genocide against Palestinians in Gaza.
The UAV force of the Yemeni armed forces, with the help of Allah Almighty, carried out a specific military operation which consisted of targeting one of the important targets in the occupied Jaffa region, what is now called Israeli Tel Aviv. The operation was carried out with a new drone called Yaffa, which is capable of bypassing the enemy's interception system and undetectable by radars. The operation has achieved its goal successfully.